While Austin's Numa crew was in a frantic race to achieve the impossible, Triss Margrave was having no doubts about the imminent success of his project. Doubt was something foreign to him, and would never have entered his mind. As the Polar Adventure plowed through the South Atlantic, he sat in his comfortable ergonomic chair behind a control panel built into the forward observation platform. His long fingers played over the controls like an organist in a great cathedral. He had started the dynamos as soon as the ship left port. Each turbine was represented on the large computer monitor by a red symbol and number, which meant that it was active at a low level. Red lines ran from the dynamos to the image of a cone. The cone was green except for its red point, indicating that a minimum amount of power was flowing into the huge coil lodged deep in the ship's hold. Margrave thought of it as the equivalent of idling a car motor. On another screen, the console displayed a cutaway diagram of the Earth that showed its layers. Special sensors in the ship's hull would be able to detect the electromagnetic penetration and the extent of ripple effect. Gant had been on a tour of the ship talking with his security people. Ever the perfectionist, Gant wanted to be sure that when Margrave had outlived his usefulness, he would be quickly disposed of. As he entered the observation platform, Gant smiled and said, "Not much longer?" Margrave glanced at his GPS. "We'll be on target in the morning. It will take another hour to position the ship and deploy the coil. The sea is calm, so it might not be that long." Gant went over to the bar and poured two tall flutes of champagne. He gave one glass to Margrave. "A toast would be appropriate." "Here's to the defeat of the elites," Margrave said. "To a new world." Gant raised his glass. "And a new world order." The 747 was over the Atlantic Ocean, flying on a southerly course at more than 500 miles per hour, when Carla and Barrett came through the door of the cargo section. She raised the screwdriver in her hand like the torch on the Statue of Liberty. "Ta-dum," she said to Austin. "Time for trumpets and drum roll. We're done." "The dynamos are all on track and running," Barrett said. As the plane sped toward the South Atlantic anomaly, Austin brought the Numa crew up to date on the situation. They agreed to split up when the time came, with Carla on one side of the plane, Barrett on the other. Austin would alternate back and forth and serve as liaison with Zavala, who would keep watch from the cockpit. Zavala's voice came over the speakers. He said the plane would pass over the outer limits of the search area in 15 minutes. Austin could feel the growing tension of the cabin. The atmosphere grew even tenser when Zavala announced that they were in the hot zone. They took up their positions at the aircraft windows. 10 minutes passed, then 20. Austin moved back and forth across the wide cabin, offering encouragement. It was hard to believe that a vast ocean lay below the thick layer of clouds. Austin had suggested that the plane fly a series of parallel runs back and forth across the search area. They finished one run, then made another, and were on their third when Austin began to wonder if he had made a mistake. He was checking his watch every few seconds. The plane had turned to make another run when Carla called out, "I see something, around 3 o'clock. Austin and Barrett scrambled across the cabin to the other side of the plane and peered through the windows. The sun was lower in the sky and its slanting rays had created blue shadows in the cloud cover. But off to the right, the sky pulsated with a golden white radiance that was similar to the glow a thunderstorm would produce in the clouds. Austin grabbed a microphone connected to the cockpit. Zavala replied over the speakers that he had seen the glow in the clouds as well. The plane banked into a turn, and like a moth attracted to a flame, began its long glide toward the light that bubbled in the distance, like a giant witch's cauldron. Austin felt it prickling on his scalp, and his hair stood on end, not because of fear, because of the sudden electrical charge that saturated the air. Carla's long blonde tresses were standing on end, like the hair on the Bride of Frankenstein. She reached up and patted her hair down, with limited success. With his shaved scalp, Barrett had no such problem, although the spider tattoo had goosebumps. The electrical show was just beginning. Every surface of the cargo section began to glow a shimmering blue, like the St. Elmo's fire that sailors used to see dancing in the rigging of their sailing ships. The plane's interior lights blinked on and off, as if a child were playing with the switch. Then the lights went out completely.